All right, everybody, thank you for joining me. I'm Dave Barden. I head up telecommunications and comm infrastructure research for the U.S. and Canada, and I'm very pleased to welcome you here to our first session in the Champagne Room. And I'm very happy to welcome Rogers Communications CEO Tony Staffieri and Chief Financial Officer Glenn Brandt. So thank you guys for coming. I really appreciate you being here. Before we begin, maybe Tony, I'll open it up to you. Maybe if you have any kind of opening comments about some of the news flow around Rogers these days.
Sure. First off, Dave, thank you for having us. And it's good to see you all in person. Thank you for the meeting. A couple of things I'll touch on at the outset. One, in terms of where we're at with the Shaw file, maybe, and two, in performance. And just give you a quick highlight on both of those. With respect to the Shaw transaction, the file is now sitting with the Competition Bureau, and it's moved to a tribunal, which is, as you're aware, very much a court-type process. And so that hearing is scheduled for early November. Timelines are all public. Over the next few weeks, you'll continue to see and hear about evidence that gets filed by both the Bureau as well as from us, Shaw and Videotron. And so expect to see disclosure around that. We expect the tribunal process to last a few weeks with a decision coming out after that. Our expectation is there's still the possibility and likelihood that the transaction is approved by year end. But in the event that it's not, we've done all the right things to make sure that we have all the pins in place if we need more time post year end. And you just saw that through our financing that we extended. I think the important thing on the transaction to highlight is Rogers is committed, Shaw is committed, and Videotron is committed to see this through completion. While it's been a lengthy process, we've been very methodical and disciplined and surgical in doing all the right things to put this transaction to a conclusion. But importantly, this has not been a distraction on the improvements we've been making and continue to make in our core operations. You've seen a good trend come out of first quarter, second quarter, as we've made changes. And we're pleased with the execution and the progress we're seeing on that front and continue to see in our operational performance. And that's against the backdrop in Canada, where the size of the population continues to grow at very strong rates. And we're performing well in terms of market share against that backdrop. Maybe I'll pause there.
That's great. maybe I'll open it up to audience questions a little later if there's more questions on that subject. But maybe what I'll do is we'll jump into the business side of things. Maybe the one question I would have would be just on the special mandatory redemption consent decree that you concluded. It went out to December 31st. Should we be concerned that this thing could take that long?
We selected a date. First off, we wanted to get ahead of this. This was nothing but enterprise risk management. When I looked at it and said, you know, I'm as confident today as I was 3 months ago that we can close this deal in 2022. And we are still working in that regard, but we're going to close either a few days before the end of the year or potentially a few days following. And when I'm responsible for managing enterprise risk, that's a window that we wanted a little more leeway and flexibility on. We were very pleased with the financing we put in place, wanted to preserve that capital. And so the intent was to go to the bondholders, get consent to extend. And while we were extending, it was, let's just do this once, eliminate any risk of needing to consider this again. It's not going to cost any more or less if we go out to the year end. And so that was how we selected the date, Dave.
Perfect. Thank you. So I guess maybe I want to start off with the kind of higher level question we've been asking a lot of the other wireless players here in the U.S. We just spoke with AT&T and T-Mobile earlier. You know, kind of your assessment of the consumer health, payments, bad debt trends, inflationary effects, and you know, is the consumer likely to be as healthy, you know, 6 months from now as they are today, and are they less healthy today than they were 6 months ago?
Dave, I'll start with a reference I made in the opening comments. One is size of the market because of immigration and students coming back to in person has been extremely strong in Canada. We've traditionally had, you know, immigration at about 300,000. The number this year will probably be more like 450,000. And in terms of, you know, what we would call the undocumented immigration, folks coming over, buying homes, that's been particularly strong. And so as we look at both cable and wireless, but in particular wireless, you saw that in Q2, very good ramp up in size of market. And we continue to see that in the third quarter. So market backdrop, really strong, pleased with our market share performance against that backdrop. As we look to some of the fundamentals in terms of, you know, as you would point out, quality of accounts, we aren't seeing anything that's worrisome from a collection standpoint. So that continues to track well. In terms of inflationary pressures and the impact that it's having on our cost structure, I would say a couple of things. We've previously talked about the supply chain impacts, and there isn't anything there that's impacted our business in any material way. On the inflationary side, certainly from a labor standpoint, we're seeing a little bit of that in what we would call frontline jobs, whether it's call center, in our retail space, construction. It's had an impact, but it's been manageable. Within the cost structure and the results you have seen, but more broadly, not much of an impact to our businesses, all three of our businesses, in terms of inflation.
Good. And no meaningful or noteworthy changes in day sales receivables, you know, consumer payments and those sorts of things.
All those stats continue to trend well. And we had always been prepared from the outset of the pandemic for a slowdown or a risk from that perspective. And all the metrics, including those you just referred to, day sales outstanding, time to cash, and all the other ones we closely monitor, continue to track well.
And so I think as we kind of think about kind of post-pandemic trajectories, I think three things kind of hit you guys. You know, one was, you know, the big retail being affected by people not moving around. Second was international roaming. Third was immigration. I think you just mentioned immigration's now come roaring back. That's both the positive for the broadband business in terms of total addressable market opportunity as well as wireless. I think you guys talked about the international roaming being back to 80% by the second quarter. You were maybe wondering how that would really track as the summer went on. Have you seen that continue to move back towards pre-pandemic levels in absolute terms?
On the roaming side, from a wireless standpoint, we continue to see strong roaming numbers. And if you're to look at it from a revenue perspective, it sits at about 130% of what it was pre-pandemic,
right.
Largely on the back of consumer. We have not seen business roaming pick up in any material way. And so it's really on the back of consumer, continues to trend strongly. But importantly, we look to what underlying ARPU looks like beyond just roaming. And what we are seeing, and we've talked about a strategy to continue to index more to our main brand and unlimited plans. And we're seeing that track nicely, not only for us, but for the industry as well. And so as we look to the underlying fundamentals beyond roaming, that's moving in a good direction.
Mm-hmm. And just to put a number around that. So when we started this conversation around international roaming, it started around $500 million. And I guess if it's running at 130%, that's, you know, $650 right now. Where could that number go if we really got back to international business travel and we maybe we're already there at full consumer travel, but where could that number go?
Our sense, Dave, that's a difficult one to predict in the sense that, as you said, where are we at with respect to consumer travel, mm-hmm. And as broader recessionary concerns play out, is that going to dampen some of the consumer travel? But at the same time, to what extent will we see business travel offset it? And so while the opportunity for continued upside is there, I would say we index more to that revenue being what it's going to be. And let's make sure the fundamentals in terms of ARPU are there, more importantly. And so that's how we sort of think about the two revenue streams.
And I think on the business market, Dave, we're going to see a slow recovery of travel. Yeah. I think, I look at our own experience, and I will test whether or not those business trips are necessary within my own group as well as across the company. We've gotten used to, being a little bit more domestically located. And that's a cost category that is easier to keep under control if you keep it under control. And so I think we're going to see a slow recovery on the business side. The consumer side, I think we've probably seen that recover in terms of the pent-up demand. We saw that through our March break in the spring and through this summer.
And so we've got improving roaming with some longer tail from business. We've got improved immigration, maybe even a bubble of immigration currently to replace what we lost before. Then one of the things that was a headwind a year and a half ago was the unlimited kind of overage going away. We kind of inflected, pivoted through that through the second half of last year. So when you talk about underlying kind of ARPU growth, presumably coming from the plan upselling that's occurring, what does that look like? Is that a percentage point of tailwind? Is it 2 percentage points of tailwind in ARPU?
Yeah, it's early days in terms of the migration. And so as we think about number of customers still underpenetrated in terms of customers that have moved to unlimited plans. Mm-hmm. And so there's still opportunity there. I would say the market overall, our emphasis has been moving away from flanker, and for us it's Fido, and more clearly delineating and defining what the value proposition is for the flanker. And so as you want 5G, you want unlimited, or you want the latest handset, that's going to be on the premium brand. And that delineation has worked well over the last 6 months in our market. I would add that the delineation with Chatter has also been much clearer in terms of what the prepaid value proposition is as well. So while there was a blurring over the last several years in the Canadian context, and certainly for us, of the brand value proposition, we've really made a conscious effort in both wireless and cable to redefine that. I think it's important to mention in cable as well, if you were to look at our internet and video offering, it's almost all exclusively now on the Rogers brand, which is important. And so that'll be a broader strategy trend for us, is to reemphasize the main brand going forward. And so what that looks like, it probably is low single digit for now, is the way we think about it, Dave, and we'll have to see how the market plays out over time, but pleased with that migration and the potential upside for that.
Yeah. One of the reasons why that was given, why Rogers moved to the unlimited posture, was that there was a sense that Canadian data consumption usage was slowing down, was kind of apexing. Depending on who you ask, in the U.S., consumption is probably 8 to 10 gigabytes per month. In Canada, I think I remember it was closer to 2. And so what are you seeing happen as a function of the unlimited plan adoption?
A couple of dynamics at play. Within our base, we see an average of 3 gigabits per month of usage, as you suggest. But interestingly, for customers on 5G unlimited plans, that is at 7 to 8, much closer to what you're seeing in the U.S. And that's going to be an important driver for growth. And we very much want to encourage that data usage. And so that's what we're seeing. The second important point is, as we move post-pandemic and there's much more consumption outside of the home, we're seeing usage growth rates back in the 30 to 50% year on year in terms of growth. And so that continues to feed in well to the value proposition of unlimited plans.
Perfect. So then as we think about kind of the shift in the revenue profile, now having a higher margin roaming contribution factor, a higher margin contribution factor from kind of the core ARPU growth, which is a function of mix shift, what are you experiencing now in margins as a tailwind versus what are you seeing inflation take back from a headwind?
Go ahead, Tony. Sorry.
Yeah, I'll start. You know, we've been sitting as you look at margins for us, they've been in the 62 to some quarters as high as 65%. And there have been a couple of factors at play, the revenue upside, and we very much stay focused on what we call revenue flow through. And so that roaming revenue comes with the cost of sales for that roaming cost. But the rest is flowing through nicely. And we generally sit at, if you look at our flow through rates, anywhere from 50 to 80% consistently on flow through rates. So that's an important measure for us. The second piece of it is the work we've been doing on cost efficiencies. And that continues to come through and you see that playing. And then the third one is handset costs. And as we and the industry moved about 3 years ago in Canada to handset financing, that had a major shift in cost structure for us and how much subsidy on the handsets has been embedded. What we've seen largely as a result of restricted supply, handset supply, in our markets is much less in terms of discounting on the handsets. And so it's been a neutral to slightly positive impact on margins. How that plays out as supply comes on board, we'll need to see how competitive the market dynamics are on that. But I would say on balance, if you're to look at long-term trending in our marketplace, it's been a neutral factor, but overall positive.
Well, that's actually the opposite of what's happening in the United States. So that's actually good to hear. So speaking of which, it might be happening right now. The iPhone is getting launched. We're having a new iPhone cycle here. I've been asking everyone, how do you see iPhone cycle 2022 playing out in Canada? Is it going to be a non-thing because you just won't get the supply that you're going to see in the US? And so this positive factor of limited handset supply will keep the market disciplined, or might that start to unravel as the new iPhone becomes more available?
In terms of market, you know, much like we saw in the previous years, we tend to get what I would describe as adequate supply. And so we do pretty good in terms of our allocation of Apple devices. And so we're optimistic and confident about a strong fourth quarter and back half of third quarter on that, although not much of it will impact third quarter. It'll largely be a fourth quarter phenomenon. As far as we can tell, and it's we'll have to see what demand looks like for the product. But and based on past experience, we've done okay in terms of balancing the supply and demand side of it. So we don't see it as a concern in limiting. Whether or not it's going to be oversupply in terms of, that's probably a question better for Apple to answer in terms of how they think about country allocations. But everything we're seeing and working through with Apple, we see it as well balanced in terms of supply and demand.
Okay, good. My son just started his senior year of high school today, which reminded me that back to school season can be a very active part of the time of the year for the Canadian marketplace. Could you kind of give us the Tony Staffieri Monday morning quarterback review of how back to school season went as an industry level and how Rogers was positioned competitively?
Yeah, great question. We were excited going into it because a lot of the back to school, there are really a few parts to it. One is attending back on campus and attending live. And the other part of it are international students that started to come back. And so what we saw in both wireless and cable, but especially in wireless, is another contributing factor to the growth. And so we're pleased with that part of it. And as we think about in-residence internet, that has played out well, but in line with what we would have seen in 2019 or earlier. And I would say it was a healthy, competitive market. It wasn't, you know, as we think about pricing in the marketplace, all the offers that you would expect to see played out in the marketplace. So we're pleased with the intensity of it, and we're pleased with our market share performance in against that backdrop.
Would you say that Shaw's situation is maybe a positive contributing factor to industry performance for everyone else in the market?
I assume, Dave, when you asked that, it's in the context of wireline, or is it wireless?
Wireless, yeah.
On the wireless side, Freedom continues to compete. And if you looked at back to school, what you would have seen play out in our marketplace is continued competitive intensity from them in terms of advertising as well as promotional offers. And so they continue to participate. They have a value proposition that hunts in a certain space of the market. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, we'll all see what their numbers look like when they report, but they continue to perform, it seems like, as I said, in the space of the market that they do. But we are, you know, as we think about how we do in that space with Chatter and Vital Brands, we're quite comfortable with where we're trending on that. But importantly, as I said, what we saw this back to school season, unlike previous ones, is a much more indexing towards the Rogers brand, mm-hmm. and students looking to get in limited plans rather than flanker capped plans.
Got it. So just a little bit on the network real quick. You know, you had a good haul in the 3.5 gig auction. There's a 3.8, I think, coming up next year. What is your appetite for that spectrum given? Is it complementary and therefore you really, it would be a good spot to put even more money to work? Or do you have what you need in that band and maybe save some of that capital for other uses?
3,800 is going to be important. We think about, you know, as the largest independent network throughout the country, network is our key value proposition. And so as we think about wireless spectrum, especially in a 5G, and as we move beyond that, for a place like Canada, low band spectrum, 600, 700, important, and we have leading position in that to carry long distances. And then as we think about small cells, and infiltrating what we would largely look at as urban areas and the major markets, which are our strong points, 3,500 and 3,800 are going to be important for that. And so we look at the 3,800 as an important asset. We did do extremely well in the 3,500, and to some extent, it's interchangeable. Mm-hmm. But you can expect us to, and I'll be careful with the comments because we're always limited in what we can say, but it's an important part of the spectrum portfolio.
Okay, good to hear. So I didn't know where to ask this question, so I'll just ask it now, and maybe it's a good segue into the other business units. But, I mean, you know, you came in, you know, with a mandate to try to fire up Rogers' performance along a lot of different vectors. And I think, you know, now it's that we've kind of gotten a year into your tenure, I'd love to kind of just get a checklist of what are you actually doing now to kind of turbocharge Rogers' performance? And I know this will touch on wireless and cable both, but I'd be interested to kind of hear, and then we'll kind of end up talking about the cable side of the business too.
Yeah, great question, Dave. I would say the fundamentals haven't changed. So getting Shaw done is important, but we're not going to allow that to take away from our focus on operational improvements. And as we think about each of our three businesses, and in particular, I'll talk to wireless and cable, the fundamentals haven't changed. Against the terrific backdrop of a growing market, how do we make sure we get leading share? And that's really been about continuing to improve customer service, network, but importantly, is exercising our strength and flexing our strength in our distribution channels. We've always had leading distribution channels. And one thing we learned coming out of the pandemic, we all thought that maybe this was going to be a shift for the industry to online. What we saw as soon as things opened up, the strength of stores is there. Folks want to come in and see the device, talk to an agent. And that's traditionally been our competitive advantage. And you're seeing that play through. You look at our market share performance in the first half of the year, second half, we, you know, 40% share on mobile phone. So we're quite pleased with that. And so you see that play through. So one is, how do we get leading share in that growing market, first and foremost? And two, and we touched on it, is what are the fundamentals to grow ARPU? And there it's going to be a brand shift to unlimited, and you'll continue to see more on that. On the cable side, similarly, as we look to growing that with the population growth, we sort of see a market that we will invest in that population growth. And so our volume should naturally grow over the next few years in 3-5% range,
mm-hmm.
Based on the population growth in our market. And as we look to post Shaw, that'd be true of the Western market as well. So we got 3-5% growth in population, continue to grow ARPA in the 1-2% range. And our view is we've got a business that's growing somewhere between 4-6, even 7% in some quarters. And that's the focus there. On both of these, combine them with continued cost efficiency. Mm-hmm. And we think we've got a pretty good model from that perspective.
So maybe I'll ask one or two more questions on the cable, and then I'll invite people to ask questions in the room. But just, you know, again, going back to, you know, pretty happy with the market dynamics in the mobile business. How is the cable versus the telecom dynamic unfolding now? I'd imagine similar with the immigration and the housing formation and such, but if you could give us an update there.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say as we look to the cable side of it, we start first and foremost with how does our value proposition compare? In the Canadian space, and particularly in our market with our primary competitor, I think as you hear things like fiber, which we're all deploying, speeds are generally at a level in terms of capability that's well beyond where the consumer demand is today. Although for over a year, we've offered 1 gig across our entire footprint, less than 15% of our base is on 1 gig or higher. So the capability of our network continues to stand well above where the consumer is. It's an important from a marketing bragging rights standpoint. We get that. We just launched this past week 8 gig symmetrical on the latest 6E technology. And so we'll continue to do that and lead in terms of capabilities. But translate that to what's happening in the marketplace. And you know, the game has really become a more neighborhood by neighborhood, condo building by condo building type of competitive environment. And we're doing well in that. And as we look to what we call greenfields, whether it's single home or condo construction, that's an area we've traditionally played very well in and got dominant share. And we'll continue to look at that, especially with the immigration that I referred to, in getting dominant share in that space as well. So as we look to how we play tactically from a sales execution standpoint, combine it with our core capability on network. And then the last piece is the value proposition in terms of a user experience. We are doing extremely well with a Comcast Xfinity platform, which we branded Ignite. That's working well from an internet standpoint, but importantly from a video, as we migrate from what we would call linear cable viewing to OTT alternatives, which in Canada really picked up over the last 12 to 18 months and caught up to the US. If you think about all the brands that are there on our Ignite platform, we just added Apple TV Plus. So all the availability is there. So you're seeing the migration happen much faster, and the product just lends itself to that type of viewing experience. So we have the competitive advantage in terms of network, competitive advantage in terms of the product itself. And we continue to work on the sales execution of it. That's how we're seeing the cable side of it.
Helpful. All right. Does anyone have a question out here on any topic that interests you? Sure.
So we heard from AT&T earlier, they were fairly muted on the fixed wireless architecture type. And they said if they can get fiber to households, they'll build with fiber. And so you have a fairly competitive rural, market with some of the more regional players. You know, what's your view on fixed wireless architecture's kind of long-term prospects?
We continue to view fixed wireless access as a good alternative where we don't otherwise have fiber/coax. So just given our background in being a cable operator, we have a very deep network in terms of cable. What we are seeing in the Canadian landscape, where in areas that we think of as rural or smaller markets, the government has stepped up, and whether it's federal, provincial, or local governments have stepped up to provide capital. And you would have seen some of those auctions happen over the last little while to subsidize some of the infrastructure build that we would do in those markets. And so there's clearly not only the technology solution, but the funding there to make sure that that type of hardwire infrastructure is going to be there. In certain spots, we are seeing a good market for fixed wireless access. But right now, we're seeing it as just that, filling in where we don't otherwise have a robust network. And keep in mind, we come at it from a different perspective than a telco, in the sense that we've never started with a DSL copper infrastructure. We were coax, moved to fiber coax, or fiber directly to the home. And so the robustness of our wireline network is still ahead of the consumer demand, as I spoke about earlier.
From a an isolated but personal standpoint, when I started working from home, I don't live in a Rogers territory, and my wireline provider, the network just wasn't able to keep up with my conference calls, my video conferencing meetings. I was on one call, and our head of network, Kai Prigg, said, "We can't hear, you know, two out of every three words you're saying." He asked me to run a speed test on my mobile phone. I did. The next day, he sent a Cradlepoint modem to me. I plugged it in, took 2 minutes to get connected. And for the next 2 years, I was exclusively working off of fixed wireless in my home office. Every call was a video conference call. And over the course of that 2 years, I had 5 calls that were interrupted. That's it. It works. And particularly in Canada, where I'm located just north of Hamilton, just off the end of Lake Ontario. It's a densely populated area, about 55 miles west of Toronto. But it's not serviced with high speed cable offering, or not as high speed as I wanted. In Canada, there are a lot of communities like that. And with us having the largest portfolio of spectrum at 600, 700, 3500, 3800, and we'll participate in millimeter wave and what have you. In those rural areas, the low band spectrum travels long distances and is able to serve the less densely populated areas with carrying data. For me, it worked beautifully. I'll stop there.
Well, I think that the other side of that question is the threat that it might pose as opposed to an opportunity. And so, yeah, cable's got a very good product in the U.S., but it has negative market share as of 2Q22, just because there's just a different option. And so are you at all concerned that a TELUS will come into your footprint with a mobile product and try to do to the Rogers cable plant and broadband subscriber base what the T-Mobiles and the Verizons are doing currently to the Comcast Charter cable bases?
It's a possibility, Dave, but when you think through the technical feasibility of it, there's a couple of things that what we find in urban markets, particularly places like Toronto, and that's true of Vancouver as well, dealing with building densification in a fixed wireless access is not insignificant. So over time, could it be a potential solution? Maybe. But at the end of the day, the reliability and ability to manage symmetrical bandwidth at the scale that we're seeing it grow, FWA is always going to be a step behind, as far as we could tell.
Yeah. The sometimes the cheaper products, maybe people are willing to take a step down.
Yep.
So we'll see. But also there's Canada's been pretty good about recognizing the mutually assured destruction phenomenon.
Yeah.
And people coming into incurring into one territory is likely to lead to counteraction. And no one wins when it's a...
Dave, I should highlight, in Canada, we have mandated internet wholesale access.
Right.
And so an easier alternative for any player is to come in and buy wholesale, which some have done. Mm-hmm. That's been a fairly, in our marketplace in Ontario, for example, wholesalers would generally be about 10% of the market depending on how you measure it, and it's been relatively flat. And so fixed wireless access is an alternative, but the easier alternative, if someone wanted to avail themselves to that, is the wholesale regime. And so the point I'm making is, even with that, it's been fairly balanced in terms of market phenomenon. Good.
Yeah, right. Anyone else got a question they want to ask? Yeah.
Can you just give us a quick update on the impact from the outage? I think you previously called out the $150 million of rate credits, but any impact on churn and just how the mediation process is going in terms of the network redundancy that you're working on?
Yeah, maybe I'll let you start, Glenn, and then I'll top up on it.
Yeah, I think in terms of the financial impact, the $150 million largely captures the financial impact. You'll see that in our Q3 results. In terms of the impact on churn, in the early days in particular, we saw some heightened churn. But we were fortunate perhaps in how early in the quarter this came. This is one of our busiest quarters, particularly on the wireless side, but also wireline in terms of return to school. And what we found as we moved through the quarter is, you know, we addressed the irritation aspect of it with the 5-day credit. We were out for less than a day. But call it a day, offered credits of 5 days. That took a lot of the sting for most of our customers out of being out of service. And they were able to just move on with their day. And you know, what I found over the years is if you can help customers with meeting what they're looking for from their devices, and for the most part, just stay out of the way otherwise, they're happy. And that's really how the quarter has unfolded. And so the churn aspect hit us early on. They moved on. They've got busy lives. We moved on in terms of our promotional campaign around back to school, and just making sure we were meeting our customers with what, you know, the services and price plans they were looking for in that. And what we found as the quarter has gone on is we've really moved back to the pre-outage levels in terms of ads and activity. And so the churn was it hit us earlier. We're pretty much back to where we were prior to the outage, particularly on wireless. Wireline is still a little bit more of a work in progress, but even at that, we've seen some strengthening over the more recent days. I don't know if you'd put
it. I think that's the key point, Glenn. Is it was an isolated event, and the impact seems to have been isolated as well. And so, as we look to how we've executed in back to school, as Glenn said. There does not seem to be any lasting overhang on either our sales execution or on our brand, importantly. So we're pleased with the way we've progressed out of that.
Yeah. Sure. This will probably be our last question.
Hearing you talk about show in the beginning, it made me feel that you're headed to the tribunal process. And I was wondering, given that there is a mediation scheduled for October, isn't there the potential to get closer to the commission's position before the tribunal?
Yeah.
I have a slight follow-up on that.
Yeah, real quick. So as I mentioned, the tribunal is early November in terms of when it starts. There is a scheduled mediation session in late October would be the next one. By that point, the Bureau will have seen all our evidence and we will have seen all their analysis as well. And so there is an opportunity for a mediated settlement. There's an opportunity for discussions to occur before that as well. And of course, we would welcome the opportunity to have those discussions, but we'll have to wait for the Bureau to see if they want to have a discussion before then. Otherwise, there is the opportunity for a mediated settlement. We had one in early July, and with hindsight, that was probably too early in the process because the Bureau had not seen the balance of evidence that has been and continued to be submitted over the last few weeks and over the following few weeks.
So, all right. Well, thank you for the questions. Thank you, Tony and Glenn, for being a part of this year. Thank you for coming in person. And everybody, thanks for being a part of this. Next up in this room after our 10-minute break will be Unity, and downstairs will be Walt Disney. So thank you for coming.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Cheers, everyone.